Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Plenty of thoughts from SEC Media Days coming up throughout this afternoon. We'll get to our Tuesday Top 10, plus expectations in year one of the new head coach of the Gamecocks. Florida's coach with a complaint about the SEC schedule, and Georgia thinking they finally have the quarterback to get over that hump and win a national championship. We'll get to all that throughout the afternoon and more. But Game 6 of the NBA Finals is tonight. Bucks trying to close it out, win the series at home, get their first NBA championship in 50 years. And joining us now to talk about the NBA Finals is professional basketball player Shelvin Mack, who spent a number of years in the NBA, played with the Atlanta Hawks for a couple of seasons, and he's with us now. Shelvin, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Doing well. Appreciate the time. Game 6 of the NBA Finals tonight. Bucks obviously lead 3-2 here over the Suns. Let's get right to the main point here. Do you think the Bucks close things out tonight, or do you think we're heading towards a Game 7 in this series?
Okay, no, I think they're going to close it out. Before the final started, I kind of predicted like the Bucks would go 6. I think it would be 4 straight wins, but I'm definitely believing that the Bucks are going to get it done tonight.
What have you liked, you know, the Bucks, as you mentioned, these 3 straight wins after falling behind 2-0. What has impressed you the most watching Milwaukee win these last few games?
No, their defense, the play that, you know, Antetokounmpo's making on both ends of the ball. Also in the finals, no one's giving up anything. It's very difficult. But the biggest thing is I noticed is the Bucks is taking away Devin Booker's playmaking ability. You know, he's having less assists now than he did the first 2 games when he was just passing. I think he's averaging like 12 assists those first 2 games. And they're taking his capabilities away of passing and finding open teammates and making him go out there and get 40 points every single time. And I think that's kind of struggling with their team, overall with their team.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Giannis is obviously the star of the Bucks. He makes the big plays, gets the big numbers. Chris Middleton has kind of been the clutch guy and the big other scoring option. And then Drew Holiday played well offensively the other night, but it's been about his defense slowing down, especially Chris Paul of Phoenix. So for Milwaukee in particular, you know, which guy do you think has been most important or most valuable here in this series for them?
To me, all of them have been very valuable. It just shows you what kind of superstar Antetokounmpo is. You know, most people at his caliber level, you know, they want to take the best. They want to take the game-winning shot or do this. You know, he understands that it's what's best for the team. We want to win, and I can do all the dirty work right now. I think I'll say he's the most valuable. You know, he can guard 1 through 5. That's where they're having a tough time. The Suns scoring the ball late. That's when he's at the 5. He's able to guard pick and roll and able to get back to DeAndre Ayton. But their whole team is just, it's a well-put-together team.
Yeah, and you mentioned Milwaukee's defense and slowing down the Suns lately. When you watch this series and how it's turned on its head, has it been more about what Milwaukee has done, some of the adjustments they've made, or has it been more about what Phoenix has maybe failed to do for the reasons why they've been struggling a little more lately?
A little bit of both. You know, in the NBA, you know, it's a make-or-miss league. You can play the best defense in the world, but if dude makes a shot, it doesn't matter. I think the Suns just haven't hit that spot yet where they can get very comfortable and knocking down, you know, tough shots. You know, Bucks are making them shoot a lot of tough shots. You know, Drake Crowder has some great games here and there. He's like a little bit more consistent. I think it would be a kind of a different, you know, series. I think he's like the X factor tonight.
Talking with Shelvin Mack, who spent a number of years playing in the NBA, and you played for Mike Budenholzer in Atlanta. You spent 4 years there. You were there when Budenholzer arrived, turned around that team pretty quick. What was it like playing for him as he now tries to win an NBA championship here tonight?
It was great. It's fun. As you can see, he keeps everyone engaged. You know, when I was here, you know, everyone played all the time, whether throughout the season, whether he's a 15-man, you were still going to get an opportunity to play. As you can see, he does that in the playoffs. Sometimes somebody might be playing. Sometimes they might not. It's just finding the right person to step up. And wherever you have a coach like that, you know, it's fun. And then the ball moving. You know, everyone has the freedom to, you know, shoot if you're open, let it fly. If not, you know, just make the right play. But, no, I'm wishing that nothing but the best for him. Hopefully they're able to get the win. I know a lot of guys on their coaching staff as well that was here in Atlanta. And I have good relationships with those guys.
You know, it's pretty remarkable that when they were down 2-0 to the Nets, people were talking about Budenholzer not coming back next year. Now here he is, one win away from being an NBA champion. The knock on him had been, fair or otherwise, I mean, you played for him, so you know best, but the knock from, say, the media or the outside world has always been his lack of adjustments, but we've seen Milwaukee erase multiple deficits here in the playoffs this year. What have you seen from Budenholzer coaching in this series that has helped the Bucks turn this thing around?
No, I think he always kind of make adjustments. It's just, I don't think he's always going against a superstar player. You know, when he was here in Atlanta, like, I think he made adjustments. We had LeBron. Now, obviously, the Nets this year with Kyrie, KD, and James Harden, it's hard. So I think that some of that stuff played a factor. But, big adjustment. You know, you have Antetokounmpo play the five. I think that's something big. And then letting Pat Connaughton play a lot more minutes than he usually do. And he's bringing that energy, and that's kind of just what you need. Like, he's one of those energy guys that can match, like, Jay Crowder's energy.
For tonight, Game 6, Bucks may close it out in front of the home crowd. This series, who could this championship be bigger for in terms of when you talk about, say, legacy, right? Giannis, who still has a long career ahead of him, but at 26, to already have a couple MVPs, then have a championship, that'd really be something. Or Chris Paul on the other side, who's had a great career but still missing that ring. Who has this series been more important for in your eyes as somebody who played in the league with these guys, Giannis or Chris Paul?
I think it'd be very important for Chris Paul to get it, especially, you know, all the things he's been dealing with, being up 2-0 multiple times, 3-1, you know, always hurt. But able to get this far, it's going to be a big impact if he is able to win this series. You know, if he's able to win this series, I think a lot of people have him top 10 point guard all time right now. But I think this will move him up to, you know, top 5. So I'm interested to see how they come out tonight. I know he's going to be really focused and, you know, ready to get going.
You spent almost a decade in the NBA. I don't know how many times you went up against Chris Paul. What was it like playing against him?
A fierce competitor. I was going to play hard. You know what he's going to get. But the biggest thing I got from him is playing against him. You know, coming in is the way he's able to communicate to his teammates and knows everyone's plays. I can tell it takes a lot of time off the court, you know, to study the other team's playbook and, you know, be ready to play.
Talking with Shelvin Mack, who spent almost a decade in the NBA playing internationally as well. As mentioned, you spent 4 years playing for the Atlanta Hawks. What was your time like? Did you enjoy your time playing with that Hawks organization?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I loved it. Actually made it home base once I came down to Atlanta. I live here now. I still talk to some of the guys that's there, like the equipment manager and, you know, the ticket sales people. It's a great organization. I enjoy it.
You play the guard position. The Hawks obviously have Trae Young. If you've watched Trae Young this year, what impresses you about him at this young age already?
This year, I think he made a tremendous growth by being able to pass the ball a lot more. I know the previous year, he was averaging like 30. I think it went down to 26 this year. But him being able to pass the ball, get everybody more involved, it's helping him and the team grow. I think that's one thing that I was looking forward to watching this year.
Talking with Shelvin Mack, you know, after your time in the NBA, you since have played in, what, Italy, in Israel, in Greece. What's it been like going to these other countries? How was your experience playing ball in these different countries and seeing a different part of the world?
It's been good and bad. The bad part is being able to go to these countries, but being in the COVID area, not able to explore and see different things. But, you know, Italy was great. I was able to get to go see, like, the Coliseum, things I never – probably wouldn't take the chance to do unless I'm going on vacation, but also playing like EuroLeague, going to Russia, all those things. It's a great overall experience. You can see different cultures and, and meet different people. But just wish, you know, COVID went here, I'd be able to get out a lot more, a lot of the cities and stuff.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. So with that said, even if you weren't able to explore a lot of the places, do you have a favorite place that you have been throughout your basketball career, a certain country, maybe even a state here that you prefer the most? Has there been somewhere in your travels that stands out to you as the favorite place you've been able to spend time in?
Israel was really nice. I lived in Jerusalem. It's a small country, so I was able to get anywhere I wanted to go. Like a random Tuesday, I might just go to the Dead Sea and hang out. Like, those things are, like, special coming from the state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could imagine talking with Shelvin Mack. Okay, I appreciate all the time, so I hate to bring up probably a bad memory in your career, but go back to your college days at Butler where, you know, you have the back-to-back national championship runner-ups. I can only imagine what it would be like to be in a position like that. How tough was that to get so close and then, you know, come up a little bit short?
It was very tough. Me and my teammates, we're going to get together in September. We all get into the Butler Hall of Fame as a team. It's tough losing. We moved on. You know, we all gave what we gave. It didn't work out. No, the difference would be if we didn't play as hard as we could and give ourselves a chance, I think we'd be more upset. But to this day, we really don't think about it too much.
Brad Stevens, you played for him in college. Did you think when you were there at Butler playing for Brad Stevens that could you see at that time that, hey, maybe one day soon this guy's going to be running an NBA team in the front office?
No, I did not see that coming at all. I talked to Coach Stevens a lot. Didn't see that coming. I know he's excited and ready for the challenge. I think he's going to do a hell of a job with the Celtics, being able to make certain moves, being a president that you wouldn't necessarily be able to do as a head coach. So I'm looking forward to see what he's doing, especially with the draft coming up. I think it's his biggest challenge.
He's Shelvin Mack on Twitter, at Shelvin Mack, has spent most of the past decade in the NBA and joined us to break down Game 6 of the NBA Finals tonight here and the rest of the series. Shelvin, appreciate all the time. Enjoy the game tonight and enjoy your summer as well.
Yeah, I appreciate you, man.
Shelvin Mack, former NBA player, played at Butler, played internationally on Twitter at Shelvin Mack. You can also check out ShelvinMack.com. Played with the Hawks for 4 years, spent a little time at the Hornets, and now, as he mentioned, made Atlanta home base. He's still there following along in the NBA Finals, trying to get back in the league. Appreciate him joining us here this afternoon to get ready for Game 6 of the NBA Finals tonight. I do think the Bucks close it out tonight. I said that on the show yesterday. And if they can, if the Bucks can finish this thing off for Giannis, right? Giannis will be part of that company. And I don't think this is being hyperbolic, but you look back at somebody like Olajuwon, Tim Duncan, these bigs that were brought in to turn around an organization. Remember, when the Spurs got Tim Duncan, they tanked for him, so they were the worst team in the league. And then I don't know if people expected them to win that NBA Finals in 99 against the Knicks. The Rockets got their two championships when Jordan was out of basketball, when he was playing baseball. And I don't know if people really forecasted that occurring either. And Giannis here for Milwaukee, just a few years ago, they had as many wins all season as they've had in this postseason. And he's another one of those bigs, can't shoot it from the outside, but is a star that you bring into that organization, you build around, and they get you a championship. And he'd be somewhat in that conversation of like a Tim Duncan, like Hakeem Olajuwon. You draft him. They're that career guy. You build around him. They're a big for you. They're your star player. They bring you maybe a surprising championship along the way. The Rockets won a couple. Tim Duncan obviously won a few. We'll see if the Bucks finish this thing off this year, if Giannis can add on over the course of his career. But I think Milwaukee finishes it tonight. And by the way, this will be the first championship in 50 years for the Bucks. You go back to 1971, the last time the Bucks won a championship. It was the Pittsburgh Pirates won the World Series that year. Right? And they're known as the Bucks, the Buccos. And then you go to this year, if the Bucks win the NBA championship tonight, well, who just won the Super Bowl? The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Bucks. So we got two Bucks. We got dueling Bucks this year. And the last time the Bucks won the championship 50 years ago, also same idea. Different team, but you had two Bucks at the time. So tuck that away for useless tidbits. Coming up, we'll get to our Tuesday top 10 thoughts on the SEC media days as well, and I think the Bucks close it out tonight. Kendrick Perkins with some strong words for CP3 as the Suns try to avoid their season coming to an end this evening in Milwaukee. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
Great show. You did a good job.
You're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always get these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear, and we like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke, and I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays, where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours, anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Kendrick Perkins with some strong words for Chris Paul, plus our Tuesday Top 10. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. College football's right around the corner as we have the SEC Media Days this week. And so, too, is our kickoff to college football golf tournament. Thursday, August 19th, so about a month away at the Links at Stono Ferry, having a golf tournament that you can head over to charlestonsportsradio.com to register for. College football is around the corner, and ESPN Radio Charleston wants to kick off the season with a good old-fashioned golf tournament. So come out and represent your college team at your foursome at Stono Ferry, because how about this? The winning foursome will get tickets to the homecoming game of their favorite college team, courtesy of ESPN Radio Charleston. A portion of the proceeds donated to Fan Talk families to benefit the Ronald McDonald House as well for the tournament itself. But if you show up and your foursome wins this golf tournament on August 19th, we will send you to the homecoming game of your favorite school. This is not a Clemson, South Carolina thing, right? That golf tournament is at Thanksgiving. This is for all fans. You want to go to go see Oregon? You got it. You want to go see, I don't know, the University of Maine? I'm trying to think of schools that play football that are really far away. Go ahead. You want to go up to Michigan? Go for it. If your foursome wins, you're getting tickets to the homecoming game. So registration has opened this week. We can only take so many foursomes, of course, so make sure you go and sign up as soon as you can, and you could get yourself four tickets to a homecoming game to the college team of your choice, plus some merch for your team, a picture of your favorite team's stadium framed for you to hang in the office. Go to charlestonsportsradio.com to register your foursome and select which college team you will be representing, which team you'll be playing for. CharlestonSportsRadio.com to sign up. The tournament is August 19th. It's a Thursday at the Links at Stono Ferry. You can't beat it. You go out there, you play some golf, free breakfast, free lunch. And if you win, then you're heading to homecoming with some great prizes for your favorite college football team as well. College football right around the corner. CharlestonSportsRadio.com to go register today. Should be a fun time. I think we may even be out there for it. So more of the reason to go sign up, get your foursome out there. Next Thursday, August 19th, next month, I should say, Thursday, August 19th, the Links at Stono Ferry. It's our kickoff to college football golf tournament. You can register your foursome online today at CharlestonSportsRadio.com. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. He has taken a break from his crunches and his push-ups to get ready. The Daredevil is with us, Super Dave. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
All right, Mr. Luke, how you doing?
Doing well. What's up?
I was just curious. California popping up with a virus deal. I'm wondering, with the UCLA in Hawaii, you think they'll cancel that game? or UCLA would have to travel to Hawaii since it ain't over there.
Yes, I know you've been looking forward to this game for weeks. So God forbid they can't play it
because they say now California almost locked down now again because virus numbers, vaccinations aren't in line with one another. So I was just curious on how they was going to handle it. Maybe they could fly. But I guess I'll have to check the team and make sure they're okay to go over there.
Yes, of course. How many days are we away from that game?
40 days.
40 days? Okay. Well, then, you know, that's still so much time to try to predict what's going to happen. Let's see what happens in the next 40 days.
12, 28, 40.
40.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll see how things play out over the next 40 days. But I think they get that game in on August 28th.
I hope so. And then we got the Dallas-Pittsburgh game. That's coming up 17 days.
Ooh. Yeah.
So
2 weeks.
Whistle blows again.
Two weeks from Thursday.
Tim French as a guest or a referee. You might want to get a hold of that lady referee, the one that does the NFL. She's got some clues about new regulations or maybe new rules or whatever. Maybe she got to keep up with.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll text her. I'll get her.
There's
on the show.
One, right? I heard there was a lady referee.
I think there are multiple now. I think there may be multiple in the NFL.
And isn't there a coach of the NFL?
Yes. I can't think of her name right now, but she was.
You might want to interview her, too. That'd be interesting.
She was with the, she's with the 49ers. I can't think of her name at the moment.
Oh,
yeah.
49ers. Okay. Might have to be a 49er fan.
Oh, okay. All right. Super Dave. Producing the show over here. Getting people on. We'll have to get in touch with our good friend Dean Blandino.
I was actually hoping you would ask Dave about the Becca Myers situation.
I couldn't ask him anything. He's telling me how to do my job around here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But, yes, Becca Myers, fortunately, the deaf-blind Paralympian, who is not going to the Olympics now because they wouldn't let her bring her mother, who is her caretaker.
Yeah, she's a swimmer for Team USA, but she's decided to nix those plans. She has Usher syndrome, which has caused her to be deaf her whole life and slowly lose her eyesight over time.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother, Maria Myers, has always accompanied her for support. And it says, however, the two were told that due to the limited number of people allowed at the games, there would be one personal assistant for the entire team. Jeez. And individual assistants would not be allowed.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, COVID, all that sort of, but that's kind of crazy. It's a 34-member team. I think he'd be better served to have more than one assistant there for 34 people. And especially in this case where she's deaf and she does have some sight, but she's, you know, like legally blind and she's going to another country and it's her mother who's her caretaker. I get it. I know COVID-19, we have to have these strict rules. They're not doing as well in that country and that's where this all comes down to. But you think you'd be able to come up with some sort of exception, some sort of way to make this all work, so that she could still participate in the games and could do it safely or comfortably with her caretaker slash mother being there with her in Tokyo.
And things have gotten so polarizing with both the Olympics and the Paralympics. Toyota is pulling their Olympic-themed advertisements on Japanese television.
Hmm.
So they're saying sayonara to those plans.
Hey, I said, 2 weeks ago now, is it worth having or should we just bag this thing? And I got some pushback. I heard Greeny this morning on Greeny right here on ESPN Radio talking about how they have said, the committee or whatever, Japan has said that they aren't ruling out a last-minute cancellation. I mean, the Olympics are supposed to start Friday, so it's already last-minute at this point. We'll see what happens when these games, if and when they get off the ground. I know Japan has also been imploring their citizens to support the Olympics because they're getting so much pushback. I referenced the survey done 2 weeks ago at the time that only 14% of the population in the country is looking forward to the Olympics in Japan. They don't even care. They don't want it. So it's a whole thing. Obviously, for the athletes, it's a huge deal. We talked about it at the time 2 weeks ago. But it's also a little messy still with COVID over there. And unfortunately for Myers, she's electing not to go. And this is probably the end of her Paralympic career now because it's what I talked about at the time for these athletes. They only have so many opportunities. You're not an Olympic athlete into your 40s. You usually only go to about two Olympics because it's every 4 years, right? Or every 2 years, depending on the situation. But every 4 years, you're training for 4 years for this. you go to two Olympics, and then you're already 30, and you know you're competing with 20-year-olds, and that's about it for you. Unfortunately for Myers, this may be the end. You'd like to think they could come up with some workaround. They have said, on the Olympic side of things, that they their excuse was that they did not reach the deadline in time. But then the Myers family said they knew about this in February and told us then they couldn't do anything about it, and they should be able to work with us February to July. You get 5 months to figure out how to make this whole thing work. So it's an unfortunate situation. So it's still a bit of a mess. The Olympics are right around the corner, and yet still a little messy here on how this is all going to transpire. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Ricardo is with us. Ricardo, what's going on?
Now, Luke, I think things are being understated. This new Delta virus, it has no cough, no fever, just a lot of joint pain, headache, neck, upper back, and pain, and goes right to pneumonia, and you have no appetite. And they couldn't even protect the NBA players in Los Angeles. I think it's crazy that the FCC during media day, how can you get your all your vendors and everything and make sure they're clean around these players? I mean, I think you're going to have a lot of games default coming up in the college football. This is a pretty bad wave coming at us.
Yeah, and appreciate it, Ricardo. It sounds like it was raining out there. Sounds like it was, if that was the rain in the background, be careful out there. Sounds like it was coming down pretty good. I know it was raining this morning when I drove in, but nothing like that. Appreciate it. Yeah, we'll see. You know, Greg Sankey, that's how we opened the show, about Greg Sankey's comments about postponements, or I should say forfeits instead of postponements of the college football season this year. That if you can't play because of COVID, hey, you're just going to forfeit and we have to move on. We got to keep it moving. And we'll circle back to that later on this afternoon. But I do think it's the right decision instead of trying to move all these games around. It's kind of just what you have to do. Now, there is this new Delta variant, and, you know, COVID cases are up in all 50 states, and the Delta variant has been located in all 50 states. L.A. in particular, L.A. County, right, on Sunday announced that they were going back to the mask mandate. They want to mandate masks even for vaccinated people, but at the same time, also in the report said that everybody that was hospitalized with COVID was unvaccinated. There was nobody in the hospital with COVID that was vaccinated. So, as I've been saying throughout, I'm not going to tell you what to do or what not to do. You do whatever you want. I got vaccinated. That's all I care about. My family's vaccinated. No restrictions. My friends are, you know, whatever. I'm good. That's fine. You're not vaccinated. That's okay. I am. I'm still going out, doing whatever. I've been fine. Knock on wood. Everything's good. So, you do whatever you wish. But I know with L.A. County, right, this whole freak out about COVID rates going up, we have to mask up. If you're vaccinated, I think you should be fine. But I do know the L.A. County, Los Angeles, they said in one breath, well, everyone needs to mask up. And then they also said, by the way, everybody in the hospital is unvaccinated. And yet you're telling vaccinated people to mask up. So I think that's part of the message for Greg Sankey, that in the SEC, if you reach 85% vaccination rate for your team, you don't have to wear a mask. You don't have to do all the testing. Things ease up. You can kind of look the other way if you're the SEC because, you know, they have, quote unquote, herd immunity. So there's part of that as well, that it's not just about trying to keep yourself safe and healthy, but also the restrictions ease up for you. You won't have to worry so much about missing a game. So it's also a bit of a competitive advantage as well for these teams, for these athletes. When you throw that forfeit word around, right, I can imagine some of these coaches are trying to encourage their guys afterwards that aren't vaccinated, like, hey, maybe you want to think about doing so. If the doctors say it's okay for you to go get the vaccine, right, because we don't want to be forfeiting any games this year. And so for Sankey, was it just some sort of bluff or warning shot when he's got everyone's attention yesterday to say that? To say, hey, we don't have a high enough vaccination rate in this conference, and he's trying to put us, you know, it's a scare tactic that you're going to have to forfeit. You'll lose games instead. Let's try to get these numbers up before the start of the season, which is about a month away, or will they actually go that route and force teams to forfeit come September or October? We'll find out. But I did think it was a smart move by Greg Sankey, and I think it's the right move. Instead of trying to move all these games around, oh, we'll try to play it in November at the end of the year. No, you weren't ready to go for one reason or another. Maybe bad luck. Maybe you did everything you could, but sorry. You lose. We have to move on without you. And I'm not some sort of, like I told you, I'm not going to tell you how to live your life or what to do. You do whatever you want. But as you know, if you listen to the show, I'm a big data guy. And the data says that since vaccine rollout, only 1% of COVID deaths have come from vaccinated population and only 3% of hospitalizations have come from the vaccinated population. So the data has backed up its success, if you will, so far. If you're Greg Sankey, the message yesterday, just get vaccinated and let's try to play these games. We don't have to test so much. And we got healthy kids who typically, knock on wood, don't get the bad symptoms, and we'll try to play these games here in the fall. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Back to the phones because Billy is with us. Billy, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, Luke. How you doing?
Good.
And with the forfeit rule that they got going on in the SEC, and we know last year Ohio State only had to win six games and they made it to the playoff round, what would that do as an affection, say, to an Alabama or a Georgia or a Florida, that say they got to forfeit games because they came in with the COVID? And yep. Then they don't got the record that they shouldn't have because they've had to forfeit. Would that affect the playoff situation?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have no idea. For me personally, it wouldn't because you knew that they only lost. Right. The good thing about the committee nowadays, for all the problems with the playoff committee, the reason why it's better than a computer system is because you can have that nuance. You can have that gray area. You mm-hmm. can understand some things. And so if you look at a team that, say, has two losses, yeah, on paper that doesn't look very good. But when you get people in the room and they say, well, you know, one of those games was a forfeit because they couldn't play, mm-hmm. they don't have that COVID issue anymore. So for me, if I'm on the committee and a team, hypothetically speaking, has to forfeit a game this year because of COVID, I wouldn't hold it against them. But it is an interesting question about affecting the standings because then I imagine a team will get a free win as well. And so some team could look better, you know, if they're on the winning side of a forfeit or two.
And would that forfeit affect the rankings at all? Say if they've had a forfeit game and couldn't play, would that drop them in the rankings, or would the rankings still stay the same?
Yeah, that's another good question. Me personally, I would look at it as just almost like a no decision. Now, you have to have a winner and a loser in that case. You don't just – as I understand it, I don't know. Greg Sankey, I give Greg Sankey a lot of credit, but he was also intentionally vague yesterday instead of just coming out and saying – you know, like, that'll be a win, that'll be a loss, this is how it's going to affect things, and maybe because he doesn't know how it would play out. But for me, I would not look at it as a normal loss because he didn't go out there and play. Like, for example, if Alabama finishes, 10-2, and one of those games was because they had a forfeit, I would look at them as a 10-1 team. I would subtract. So if I had a vote in the AP Top 25, I think I would disregard that forfeit. That it was necessary, but when it comes to ranking the best teams in the country, I'm not going to drop them because they couldn't play a game. That doesn't mean they're still not one of the top five teams in the country. So I wouldn't hold that against them in my rankings or certainly in the playoff. Come the end of the year, say a team, worst case scenario, had to forfeit a game or two. But I know when they were actually out there playing games, yeah, they were one of the four best teams in the country, so we're going to put them in. That's how I would look at it. But it is very interesting. Then on the flip side, the other option is you have a team that could benefit from that. And then their record is boosted because they look a little bit better than they actually were. They got an easy win or a free win along the way. If this is the path we have to go down, things will be very interesting. People are going to be very unhappy. Fans, players, teams, imagine you get told, especially before a big game, like worst case scenario, Florida-Georgia. Or Alabama-Auburn, right? You're talking about one of the biggest games of the year in the SEC, especially Florida-Georgia, because that will decide who wins the division and goes to the SEC title game most likely. And imagine, worst-case scenario, in this hypothetical, you tell Florida or Georgia, one of the teams, like the day before the game, like, sorry, you guys don't have enough players. You have to take a loss. Oh, the reaction from everybody involved would be crazy. And then, as Billy brought up, what would that mean for the rankings on Monday? What would it mean for the college football playoff rankings? It'd be crazy. But I think whether it was a scare tactic or otherwise, I prefer that route instead of trying to reschedule and having the mayhem with the schedule. You know, playing Tetris with the schedule. So now we'll move on to the next week. Sorry. And I wouldn't hold it against that team when it came to my rankings for the college football season. It's just cross it off, move on. On to the next one. Almost like a no decision. You have to make a winner and a loser, but you don't hold it against that team for not, you know, for that loss, for not being able to play. That's how I would look at it. Move on, cross it off, move on to the next one. Hopefully you play next week. And even though it goes down as a loss, you understand it wasn't the same as actually playing 60 minutes and losing the game. Coming up, we'll get to our Tuesday Top 10, looking at the best quarterbacks in the SEC this year. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll get to our Tuesday Top 10, ranking the top quarterbacks in the SEC. SEC Media Weeks, or Media Week, I should say, only 1 week, continuing all week long. And we'll get to more reaction from there coming up. Game 6 of the NBA Finals is tonight, however. Before we get to our Tuesday Top 10, I meant to touch on this earlier, then we got sidetracked with everything else going on. But we were joined earlier by Shelvin Mack. Appreciate the time from him as we preview Game 6 of the NBA Finals. I think the Bucks close it out tonight. But Kendrick Perkins was on SportsCenter last night. I saw this while I was exercising, watching SportsCenter last night. And I thought, ooh, strong words from Big Perk. Kendrick Perkins with a call-out for Chris Paul tonight as he tries to save the Suns from being eliminated. Here's what Kendrick Perkins had to say about Game 6 of the NBA Finals coming up this evening.
When it matters the most, Chris Middleton always comes up. He's the Batman. And we watched it last night in the game. Giannis deferred to him. Giannis came up setting screens. He wanted Chris Middleton to be in attack mode. We heard Giannis in the post-game interview last night. He said, I trust Chris Middleton. He hasn't let me down too many times. In these moments, you go to your most skilled guy, a guy that shoots 50, 40, 90, going to knock down free throws, going to knock down timely shots, has the skill set to be able to create, get to his mid-range and pull up. I've been trying to preach to the world, Greeny. I've been having so many people attack me about me saying Giannis is the Robin. Like, that's a bad thing. Robin is still a superhero. He's just not Batman. He still needs that big brother when things get tight, when he get a possession by possession to take him home. And that's what Chris Middleton does. That's who he is.
Kendrick Perkins. That was the clip about Chris Middleton. Last night he was talking about Chris Paul, about how he needs a P3, he needs CPR. He needs to wake up. He needs to be saved. And when it comes to Chris Middleton, we've been talking about this on the show the last couple weeks, about he's actually Batman. To Giannis's Robin, I suppose. And tonight, Game 6 in Milwaukee at home, I expect another good performance from Middleton because he plays well at home. And I think the Bucks do close it out. Chris Paul needs CP3, or I should say CP3 needs CPR, but I don't think he will be able to save the Suns tonight in Milwaukee, and the Bucks will be NBA champions. Whatever happens tonight, we'll react to it on the show tomorrow. But with SEC Media Days going off this week and football right around the corner, you know, every Tuesday in the show we do a top 10 list. We love lists around here, and it is Tuesday today, and we'll have plenty of more reactions coming up from the SEC Media Days so far. But I figured with all the talk about quarterbacks and the changing quarterbacks, why not put together a top 10 list of the 10 best quarterbacks in the SEC this year? It's our Tuesday Top 10.
Time for the Tuesday Top 10, where we rank anything from quarterbacks to cheeseburgers right here on the Morrow Midday Show. Interested?
So the way I look at this is like a projection, right? Who I think will be the best quarterbacks throughout this season. It's not sitting here right now telling you based off of what they've accomplished so far. This is trying to predict how they will play this year. Which quarterbacks will be the best in the SEC this year? Obviously, 14 teams, and we won't get to all 14. We're only doing a top 10 list. So here we go with the Tuesday top 10 of the top 10 quarterbacks in the SEC. And we'll count them down from 10 down to 1. Number 10, KJ Jefferson from Arkansas. Only threw 41 passes the last season, so it's hard to get a real sample size. And he's young, and he's going to Arkansas, and they have Sam Pittman, who is not necessarily an offense. You know, he's an offensive line coach as the head coach. But I think KJ Jefferson with Arkansas. Also, by the way, they do have the toughest schedule in the country for the second straight year, so that doesn't help. But I think KJ Jefferson, I put him at number 10. Number 9 for best SEC quarterbacks this year by year's end, I'm going with Bo Nix at Auburn. I've never been the biggest Bo Nix fan. Now, he's experienced. That's good because 10 out of 14 SEC schools are changing quarterbacks this year. So Auburn has some experience. But it is a new coach and therefore a new system that he has to learn. So he is experienced, right? He's more familiar with these teams, maybe defenses, defensive coordinators, even just reading defenses, his teammates, all that sort of stuff. But you also lose some of those experience points when you now have to change systems and learn the new offense with Brian Harsin. So Bo Nix, I put at number 9. I don't think he has reached his potential or expectations so far at Auburn. He shows some flashes of the things he can do, but he also too frequently shows what he can't accomplish. I leave him at number 9. Number 8, I'll say Hendon Hooker of Tennessee. And there may be quite a few names on this list that even as a big college football fan, you may not be familiar with because, again, we have so much turnover in the SEC at the quarterback position this year, which is why this list, I think, is even a little more fun because it's about predicting the future. It's about trying to predict who's in the better situation, who can have the better success. I put Hendon Hooker at number 8 because he has Josh Heupel coming into town, who has in the past been regarded as a good offensive coach. Obviously, he was a good quarterback in his own right 20 years ago. Has done a good job as an offensive coordinator or his offenses when he's been a head coach. So he goes to Tennessee. Hooker was kind of an insurance policy, but he is transferring in from Virginia Tech, so he has some experience. He knows Power 5 competition. He's playing for a coach that I think will do a good job, a coach that you'd want to play for if you're a quarterback. Hendon Hooker, I put number 8. I think he'll have a pretty solid year for Tennessee. Tennessee, they've had issues at the quarterback position, you know, the last couple of years. Number 7 on the list, I'm going with Texas A&M's Haynes King. Now, Haynes King is filling in for Kellen Mond. So, inexperience. That's the concern for King. But the pros, that would be the con. The pros would be Jimbo Fisher. Plenty of talent around you at Texas A&M. And also, he had a chance. He only threw 4 passes last year, but he was with the program. So he's not like a true freshman coming right out of high school having to start in September. He was with the program. He should know the offense. He should know the guys he's throwing to. He's only thrown 4 passes, so there's that concern. Young, inexperienced quarterback in the SEC, you could get eaten up. But you got Jimbo Fisher. You got some talent around you. I put him at number 7. Haynes King, the new starting quarterback for Texas A&M. Number 6, probably higher on my list than most, but it's Missouri's quarterback, Connor Belizic. How do you say that last name? I like him a lot. What I do know is that he played well last year as a freshman. Remember, he had over 400 yards against LSU, and that was like his coming out performance. Now, granted, we know the LSU defense was pretty lousy last year. It's why they already got rid of their defensive coordinator. But as a freshman, he had 3 games in the SEC of over 380 passing yards. And what do they say? The cliche, best thing about freshmen, they become sophomores. So he's another year older, another year in the system. Already had 3 games last year. He had almost 400 passing yards. Good arm talent. He showed some talent. Now, he's going to have to play. His big games last year came against some of the worst defenses in the SEC, so he's going to have to play better against better competition. But I think that Missouri is a little bit of a sleeper team. I think they'll be better than a lot of people expect, and because their quarterback is going to be a lot better. He could be that next Drew Locke there at Missouri. I like his arm, showed a lot of poise as a freshman, had some big games last year. So I put him at number 6, 6th best quarterback in the SEC this year. Then we get to the top 5. And these top 5 would probably be the same 5 on most lists, maybe in a different order. But I think the top tier of quarterbacks is relatively clear in the SEC. Number 5, I go at Miles Brennan for LSU. Now, it's a little bit of a quarterback race between him and Max Johnson, the son of Brad Johnson. And Max Johnson looked good last year, holding things down at the end of the season. But Miles Brennan is supposed to be the guy. And he had better numbers last year when he was actually playing. You hope he's healthy this year. And he is the better quarterback. It's never a bad thing to have multiple options at the quarterback position. I know the expression is if you have 2 quarterbacks, you have none. But I look at it as it's a good problem to have. If you have 2 talented quarterbacks to choose from, and I think both of these guys are talented, Miles Brennan or Max Johnson. I think Miles Brennan will be the quarterback for LSU, and I think he has a good year for them. Number 4, the best quarterbacks in the SEC, Emory Jones of Florida. I was listening to Dan Mullen talk about Emory Jones yesterday, and I think Emory Jones is going to have a really good year. Now, he got a little action last year. He was used as like a running option, right back like Tim Tebow, Chris Leak days. They had Kyle Trask, and you use Emory Jones a little bit. Arm didn't look that great. That's some of the concern. You know, is he more of an athletic quarterback? Can the arm hold up? Limited sample size. We haven't seen him play under center, throwing the football a whole lot in the SEC. But he was a 4-star recruit who was originally committed to Ohio State, ended up switching to Florida. Clemson also recruited him. If you're a Clemson fan, you probably remember the name Emory Jones. He was a big-time recruit. All the top schools were looking at him. And now he's playing for Dan Mullen, who's done a great job as an offensive coordinator over the course of his career with multiple quarterbacks. He had Tebow. He had Dak Prescott. He had Kyle Trask. He had all sorts of different quarterbacks, and he could get the most out of them. And I think he does the same for Emory Jones. Plus, Jones was there last year, so same idea. It's a new quarterback, but it's somebody who's been there at the program that should know the system, should know who he's throwing to, should know the offense, even if it's going to change a little bit this year compared to what Kyle Trask was running. But I think Emory Jones is set for a big year. Big-time recruit, an athlete that helps young quarterbacks. The rookie quarterbacks in the NFL that have the most success usually are the ones that can run as well, because when you get in trouble, you can run your way out of it. And I think Emory Jones will do some of that as well. That as he maybe struggled to read defenses early, he'll just make plays with his feet. I think Emory Jones will have a big year for Dan Mullen. I'm a big Dan Mullen guy. He's number four. Number three is Matt Corral with Lane Kiffin. Matt Corral is Phil Steele's preseason number one quarterback in the SEC. Matt Corral, I think, will have a big year. We saw last year he had some big numbers in certain games playing in that Lane Kiffin offense. I think it suits him well. Now it's year two of that offense. And they lost five starters on the offensive side of the football, but I think Corral will have a big year and will be one of the certainly the top quarterbacks in the SEC. But I put him at number three. I put Bryce Young at number two for Alabama, who played very little, only threw 22 passes, all in garbage time, didn't look great, but it is Alabama. I don't think we saw or expected Mac Jones, the performance we got out of Mac Jones last year either. You have all the pieces around you. It's one of the easiest places to be a quarterback. And if you're at Alabama in the first place, you must have some talent. So I think Bryce Young will step in. Maybe he won't be as good as Mac Jones or even Tua before him, but if you're the quarterback at Alabama with all that talent around you, he was also, by the way, the third highest rated recruit in Alabama history. So you know he's coming in with some expectations and certainly some ability. I think Bryce Young will be just fine with Alabama. He'll play really well. But I put him at number two behind JT Daniels. JT Daniels is number one. I thought JT Daniels looked really good last year. He was a five-star recruit, and when he played last year for Georgia, looked really sharp. Strong arm. Good decision-making, played well in the bowl game against Cincinnati. The only concern for JT Daniels is he did not play Florida or Alabama last year. We didn't see him against the top teams. We'll get to see that this year. But I think JT Daniels is the best quarterback in the SEC and will play like it this year. Coming up, our forfeits on the way to the SEC this fall and more reactions from SEC Media Days. It's the Moore Midday Show on ESPN Radio.